WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it's really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Happy Monday. You are indeed tuned into Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi, and... I kind of got a temporary co-host who is joining me. She's been here for a bit, State Representative Kathy Lenatra.
Hello, Kevin.
You get an applause. I didn't even get an applause. How'd that happen? He does a nice job, doesn't he?
He does a nice job.
Of course, Ben on the board.
Hi, Ben.
Good evening, everybody. How are we?
How are you, sir? So you're part of the first segment. You get kind of the extended segment per se.
We like extended segments.
I will tell you, but it was kind of by accident. I was supposed to get a flu shot tonight.
Oh.
I did it a year or two ago. I did it live on air, where I got the flu shot.
And you're not going to tell me they're going to come in and give us flu shots.
No. But Marianne, who's done it in the past, who works at the Oscos down at the Shaw's, was supposed to do it, but she has a clinic tonight, so.
So no flu shot for Kevin.
No flu shot, but that means we get more. State Representative Kathy Lenatra and Matt Muratori, who's going to be here.
He's on his way.
I thought, knowing that we're closing out the month of September, it warrants the conversation to talk about September being Suicide Prevention Month.
Yes.
So we wanted to do that. And, of course, the Representative Matt Muratori joins us. I like the blazer.
Oh, thanks.
Does it come with pants? The matching pants, too?
No, they're kind of the two-tone.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Although, radio is not a visual medium.
I really can't say it. I don't know why you're talking about it. But.
Folks can't see it.
It's a lovely blazer, Matt.
Fashion show live on air.
It totally is. But the thought is to be able to talk about the recent Dancing with the Dignitaries, Matt being the master of ceremonies, and getting to watch your colleague dance around Foxtrot and the whole proceeds.
It was actually the cha-cha.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
Did somebody else? Who else? Who did the Foxtrot? Do we know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think it was the Foxtrot. That's right. You did say it was the cha-cha.
I'm not sure who did the Foxtrot.
Doesn't matter.
Someone did, though.
Yeah. Doesn't matter because they didn't win.
Right. This is true.
Yeah, she won. I know.
No, again.
We haven't heard the lie.
With all due respect. Well, you mean there's still this? Is a recount? What?
No, we just haven't heard the end of it. She'll keep talking about this a while.
We'll talk about this.
I'm playing it as long as I can.
You still have the trophy, right?
I still have the trophy.
Oh, yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
If you have
it's
the hardware, you can talk
she
until...
She carries it around with her.
You can take the hard. You can keep the hardware until they take it away from you, right?
This is true.
When I did it, I came in third, so...
Really?
He's just jealous.
Yeah, I couldn't get him first, though.
So they made you in the master ceremonies.
Yeah.
He did a wonderful job.
Yeah.
And they made Rob a judge.
They did.
Him
Rob
too,
Papilla.
Yeah.
So one of those.
Rob and I did it together the first time they did it, yeah.
You guys danced together?
No, we were in the competition together.
Oh,
no, that would have been kind of odd, but.
No, it's all right. It's okay. It's all good. Just to close out the first hour, we'll tease the second hour in a bit. Haley Duff. Matt, do you know who Haley Duff is? You're a girl, so you should know who Haley Duff is.
I know the name, yeah.
Probably know Hillary Duff.
Hillary Duff, yeah. Right.
Haley is the older sister.
Yeah.
She's going to be on. She is someone who is not only an actress, a musician. She's the author of the Real Girls Kitchen blog, knowing that it is National Family Meals Month.
Oh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
As well.
Mm. Yeah, it's, people just pick it. So she'll be following your segment.
Met our friend Dave at this year's Cigar BBQ. Listen, Dave, it's not that I don't like the government. You got me all wrong. It's I don't like a tyrannical government that rips its people off under the pretense of taking care of us. telling us the money is going to be used for something and then using it for something else. Obviously not the MBTA. No, no, no. 18's not an adult. 21 is an adult. Oh, by the way, you can't have that flavor and you can't have that style now that you're a big person. But go ahead, go down the bar and drink all the flavored booze you can and get as clobbered as you want. You want to talk about community impact? They finally fixed 44 down at Plymouth Ragua. It only took 20 years. How's that for community impact? Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts, because we pay our taxes. Dave.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk.
We ease into our first segment. We kind of had a little bit of a warm-up there at the opening of the program as we have Representative Muratori and Lenatra here in studio starting things off. Just kind of a little bit of a recap of Dancing with the Dignitaries. I did plan on going, but unfortunately, life happens and I was unable to make it. But fortunate enough that the South Shore's Morning News had sound bites and had the update. Matt, what was it like for you, Matt, as far as being the MC, grabbing the mic? Because you're not shy on mic.
Well, believe it or not, I really am. I get really nervous at these things, but I get more nervous if I have to, like, dance like I did. Like that time I did 2 years ago, I went up and threw up outside first and then came in and I did okay. But no, I really
TMI,
am.
But,
but you know what? It's such a, you know, the reason I did, I know the reason Kathy did it too, because it is such a, it's such a great cause. In 2016 in Massachusetts, there were over 600 suicides. You know, suicides are five times more than homicides in the Commonwealth. 74% of the suicides are males. 55% are actually, you know, have mental health issues, which is something that we're really trying to get to the core of. So I applaud Kathy and the folks that actually did it, did the dancing. It's a lot of commitment because you have 10 lessons that you have to do.
You do have 10 lessons,
yeah. And Kathy did a fantastic. They all did a fantastic job. But Kathy, she really, I kid her, but she really did deserve to win. She did a fantastic job.
Now I heard we had a little bit of a conversation prior to you doing this, and there was kind of, we weren't sure if Greg Hanley was going to dance.
That's correct. He did wind up doing it.
He did the hustle.
That's cheating, isn't it?
How hard is the hustle?
He only had five lessons, though.
I don't even think he had five, to be honest.
Oh, they said he had five. They said, yeah, the instructor said he had five.
I could
five.
Do the hustle without trying.
But you should have seen the outfit he had on.
Oh.
It was this shiny, silvery.
It was like a lame-ish.
So like a walking crystal ball?
Kind of like
a walking disco ball.
And of course, I made the mistake of, so I asked questions of all the dancers. I made the mistake of asking in front of everyone, so where'd you get that shirt from? And he said, your closet.
Very quick of a comeback. Very nice.
No, it was good. They all did a great job. I know when we did it 2 years ago, we raised $15,000. For the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention, which is really for education, and they don't have funds that they get. So all this is for education. The more we can talk about it, get rid of the stigma, the better. I don't know how much they raised this time around.
I'm not sure either, but sure, I know it's a large amount. Yeah. And a lot of the education goes to the first responders, you know, the first people on the scene. Going back to statistics, I just read something about our veterans. So it has been, there's been 6,000 deaths every year, over 6,000 deaths every year since 2005 from veterans, and 70% of that is done by guns.
My goodness.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's really frightening when you get to, when you hear the stories, and it is the, you know, it's always known that it's ages 14 to 32, but the largest growing demographic are males in their 40s and early 50s.
Matt was describing how he felt prior to his dance when he had to dance. I know you and I, as I mentioned a few moments ago, we had talked prior to this just to kind of help promote the event. And you were nervous. You were nervous a couple of days prior to. How were you the day of the event?
I was nervous the morning of the event. And then when I got there, it was, you really had no choice. You either brought it, right? Or you looked nervous. So I had committed to do it. I was very nervous. Not going to lie, one Tito and soda helped a little bit. But it, when you're there, you know, you got to give it your all, like anything. It's, I committed to do this. I'm going to do the best job I can. And
you know why you're there. So
and
that,
you
that
know why
it
you're
all.
There. Yeah, you, yeah. You know, Jenny Babcock does an amazing job putting this together. And I really did it for the cause. You know, it hits home to me. My husband's partner, previous partner in his work, the week before had committed suicide, and he was in New York for that funeral. And I have some women friends close to me their husbands have passed to that as well. So it really was personal for me. And you just do it. You just do it. And we won. So that was the cherry on the sundae.
How competitive was this year's competition? Would you say it was very competitive?
It was very competitive, yeah. I think Connie DeLego, who was the former director of the Center for Council on Aging, probably took it more serious than anyone. She did a great job.
She did a fantastic job.
But
everyone
was going
job.
On. Patrick Flaherty, who was a selectman of Plymouth, he's, I don't know, 7 feet, 8 inches or something like that. And he did a tremendous job being as tall as he is and how low the ceiling
favorite.
Was. He won the fan favorite. Yeah,
you mean there's someone taller than Rob Hackler there?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, no, he's actually, I think he's 6'8", I think it is. Yeah.
Goodness. After you completed your dance, were you confident you had it, or were you kind of watching everybody else going?
I have to tell you, so my finale in my dance was a split, and I had not done it at all in any of the practices, and I was on the fence about doing it, and I don't even think I made a decision.
Is this like
during
dancing where you should run up and go up in the air with Patrick
Swayze? No, there
Swayze
was no lifting. I don't.
No, no, no. But I'm just saying with that. Remember at the end, there was the one problem she had was
that she had the problem. No, I never even attempted it. I kept saying, no, I can't do it today. Thinking, and then that day I said, we'll have to end differently. But once I did that, I said, if I don't win, I will be very disappointed.
Yeah. And the judges, they had a couple of professional judges. Then they had Senator DiMacito, Vinnie DiMacito was a judge, and Sheriff McDonald was a judge. And they had the captain of the Plymouth
Fire Department, John Shawstead.
So they're the ones that kind of came up with, with who really was. They did points and all that, and it was close, I think. I think everyone did an excellent job.
So it was like to see your legislative colleague win the trophy. What's it been like since she's won the trophy?
Well, like I said, you just don't hear the end of it. You know, you just this will be going on for the next year.
Combined with just having a birthday.
Yeah, and she had
just
a birthday as well. So
right, happy birthday.
Yeah,
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you.
It's all about Kathy. So.
Yeah.
We should have some tater tots to celebrate.
And I did win a plant today.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We're at the Plymouth Retirement Education Association annual meeting, and she won a plant out of all those seniors who are retired. She won a plant and took it home with her. Like, what are you doing?
I was trying to give it back. They wanted me to have it.
They did want you
they
to have it.
They did want me to have it.
So will it go home or will it go to your office? Well, we'll go somewhere in the district.
No, it's a mum, so yeah, it'll go in my flower pot on my mailbox.
Very nice. Yeah. So will you defend your title next year, or do you retire on top?
I think I should retire on top, and I would probably make a fantastic judge. Just throwing that out
there. Yeah, I was just going to say, it's like Dancing with the Stars. You do it once, and then they can move on to other people. So, yeah, she'll probably be a judge, or maybe she'll MC next year.
I was going to say.
Oh, I could never top you, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did hear good things about you emceeing.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun, you know, playing off the judges and the dancers, and it was good. The only thing, a lot of people say they wish it was closer to home, you know, closer to, because Abington is the outskirts of the county, but there's somewhere in between that could be done. I think more people would go.
I believe so, too.
Where would be an ideal place to do it?
I don't know, because you need a dance floor big enough to do some of the dances that are being done.
Like Knights of Columbus or something?
Pilgrim Hall, where we were today.
Yeah,
Memorial Hall
could be. Yeah, could probably be there. But then it's a great show too. So, but yeah, we'll see.
Depends where you sit though in the building.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Most of the time I'm up top, but you can't be in one of the corners. You got to be kind of way back where it's roomy.
Yeah, yeah. It would be nice though for 2020 to have.
It would be.
Yeah, to have the dancing program in Plymouth though.
Ooh, Dancing with the Pilgrims.
Yeah.
We're speaking with State Representative Matt Muratori and Representative Kathy Lenatra, kind of a joint State House report per se. Let's chat up. What's going on as far as any district events or any legislation, anything you're working on? I know, Kathy, you've kind of teased a couple of things that are in the pipeline for you. I think one of them is in regards to voting.
I filed a voter safety bill this session. It's a refile from Rep. Coulter, and it's been filed a few times, but this year it's seems to be getting some traction. I'm very excited about it. What that boater safety bill is, it would require anyone that's going to pilot a boat to actually take a boater safety course, which surprises a lot of people that you don't need to take one.
It really does surprise.
In this state, a lot of states require that, and Massachusetts is not one of them. My parents had a boat when I grew up, so I've been on a boat. I grew up on a boat. I've been out on a boat several times this summer, and it just seems that more and more people are getting into water sports and purchasing boats, and anybody with some money can go and buy a 40-foot boat and just bring it right on the water without any training whatsoever. And unfortunately, this season, there were a lot of accidents. There were a lot of boating accidents, and, you know, people lose lives. You know, your car has a brake. A boat doesn't have a brake.
Sure. If there's an incident, that's a cost of money for whether it's the harbor master any other emergency personnel that has to report to the scene to assist.
And to get to the scene, you know, takes a lot of time. It's not just a 10-minute jaunt, depending on where they are. So I've had a lot of support from all the harbor masters in Massachusetts. They've written some letters of support. We've had a hearing. It went very well. The environmental police I've been speaking to on several occasions. So we're really positive about that this session.
And do you think it's going to go right on through?
I mean, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. We're calling people every day.
What kind of support is it? I mean, did Representative Muratori sign on to this?
Yeah, it's a bipartisan support. Yeah, it's common sense legislation, I think. And anybody who has a coastal community like we do, I mean, it just seems to make a lot of sense. If I remember correctly, there are not many states that do not have this.
Correct.
Almost every state does have it. And it's not that expensive, and it's not that long of a training session they have to do either, but it's just some basic things that they should know.
And are there different clubs, yacht clubs or boating clubs that offer this? How would this be? Would the police need to be? Would you need the harbor master or the Coast Guard or somebody involved in the training, or not so much?
Well, it's interesting. My youngest two, so my daughter, who is 13, and my son's 12, just finished the boater safety course, and they took it from the Weymouth Harbor Master. So the harbor masters are able to teach it. The environmental police, you can take it online. I mean, the course is out there. I took it. My oldest sons have taken it. My husband's taken it. So they're there, and they're not expensive. You know, a lot of places offer it free.
Really?
Because they want to be safe. They want to make sure you're safe.
Okay. Again, boater safety is very, sure, very important. How about you, Rep. Muratori? Anything you've got that you're working on or anticipating? You know, we've got 2020 right around the corner.
I was going to say, it's been 2020, the Plymouth 400s for 5 years now, and it's unfortunately that's all you're going to be hearing from me for the next year.
Yeah.
We just had a tour. That's why I was late. We had a tourism roundtable discussion that I started about a year and a half ago. We call it Tourism Beyond 2020. But we also tonight got an update of what's happening next year, and the kickoff date is going to be April 24th. There's a maritime facility event that's going to be June 27th to 28th. There's going to be another event in Boston. We're hoping somebody from the royal family will be here in September. You know, Thanksgiving Day parade and et cetera. NBC is involved. BBC is involved. So the momentum is really building for that. We were able to get, as a legislative caucus, legislative delegation, we were able to get $500,000 in earmarks for the Plymouth 400. We're hoping to get another $250,000 through the supplemental budget and some more next year. But overall, the infrastructure monies have been over $30 million that have been put in between the state and the federal government. The state's put in about $16 million. The federal government put in most of the dredging money, which is $14 million. The dredging of the harbor will be complete sometime in October, November this year. The maritime facility that's on the Plymouth Harbor will be complete sometime by March or April of next year. So you're going to see a lot of moorings out there, a lot more boats out there. We're going to start seeing small to medium-sized cruise ships out there as well. So we feel that you know, we're really geared up and ready to go for this.
Can't tell you how interesting it is to always go to Plymouth and see how robust it is with folks visiting. I know we had the lobsters. We've had conversations about the lobsters now with the scallop roll, the scallop shells.
They're beautiful, too. Yeah.
Fantastic, especially I was myself and the missus with my sister eating at Isaac's, and you could see them right on the waterfront.
Yeah. They were just talking tonight that they're actually going to be have an author that's going to be writing a book about the scallops.
Oh, wonderful.
She'll look at Jill's book on it, and they're going to come up with a puzzle as well. So
they'll
be ready for 2020 to be able to sell as well. Yeah.
It's going to be a very exciting year.
Yeah, it really is. There's just so much going on. And we also have the MBTA who's going to, we as a delegation will be able to talk to them about doing weekend service, extended weekend service directly to Plymouth. So there'll be additional times, including leaving Plymouth around 10:30, 11 o'clock at night on the weekends. To allow for next year, and they're going to do it throughout all of next year. And if it's successful, then we're hoping they'll take it into Monday through Friday as well. Because the growth of Cordage Park with the apartments and the schools that are there, it's been tremendous. And that whole the MBTA track there at Cordage has been cleaned up now, the signage there, and so they're ready to take on more people as well.
Did I see former state representative now, I think she heads up tourism for the state, Keiko Oral, visiting Plymouth?
Yes, Keiko is now the executive director of the Mass Office of Tourism, and she's been spending a lot of time in Plymouth.
It's
huge because this is not, I think the one mistake we made a decade ago when we were talking about putting this together was we called it Plymouth 400. We really should have called it Mass 400 because when people hear about it, they think it's just Plymouth. It's not. This is a whole Commonwealth. This is a whole national event that's going to be happening. We're waiting to hear from former President Obama and Clinton to see if they're going to be here coming for the opening ceremonies, one of them to speak. Again, like I said, the royal family here as well. This is a huge thing, not just for Plymouth, but for the Commonwealth as well. So, and with NBC on board, they're talking now that today's show may be coming live from one of the events as well. So this is taking on a life of its own, and they're looking for major sponsors are now starting to come forward to give to this.
Can I speak on behalf of a friend?
Yes.
Last time I saw a friend on TV, she didn't have a chance to be on. Is there a chance we can get Representative Lenatra a chance on NBC if the Today Show comes?
Well, she will have a front row seat for all the events next year.
Fantastic.
Are we talking about the zip trip?
Yes. I saw her like,
going,
hey.
They would only let one speak. I know at that time. But the Today Show, Show.
I can see it happening. Yeah. I definitely could. Before we still got a few minutes left here, as I had teased earlier, this is a little bit more of an extended segment. My understanding is that we've got a bill in the works, a legislation in the works, or something that's already been passed. You can tell me one way or the other, and that is in regards to the Student Opportunity Act. Is this something that's in the works? So where does it stand right now as far as
funding? So it's in the works now. It's something that's just come out, and it's in the Senate's talking about it right now, and I believe they're going to be discussing it on Thursday. So it's exciting. You know, it's a little bit from the Promise Act, and I think it's more of what the MTA was looking for and a lot of what other communities are looking for. So I'm looking forward to delving into it.
Yeah, it came out of the Education Committee. So as Kathy said, the Senate is doing it this week, and they have amendments they're going to be adding to that. It really does help lower-income areas. The inner cities, it will help them
gateway
tremendously.
Cities?
Yeah, Gateway will still help them tremendously. Some of the special education there, I think, is going to help a lot of the communities. For our communities down here, it's still going to be somewhat of a struggle. So this is, I think, is just more of a beginning. I think there'll be more to it as time goes on.
The formula when it comes to the ed reform, the formula when it comes to educational funding.
Yes, I think we're dancing around that, and that's exactly what's going to have to change. But this is a good first step, I think. I think a lot of people are in agreement with this. This is a good first step, and we'll see what the amendments come out of the Senate, and we're not taking it up yet. I think we're probably going to wait to see what the Senate does, and it'll come over the House side, and then we'll see what happens. We had a meeting with the governor last week, and he's got a health bill that's coming out that's going to deal with a lot of issues, including pharmaceuticals as well. So we're looking forward to that coming out as well.
How about as far as other legislation that either of you might have in the works that you want to kind of chat about for a few moments? Hey, think of or just anything that's been common news that you'd like to weigh in on and give your thoughts on, maybe something you supported or that is being discussed in the chamber.
Yeah, well, things are a little slow right now with just getting back from recess, so it's kind of slow right now. But I think housing, healthcare, and education, I think, are the three top areas that the speaker has made as a priority. And, you know, we did have those last session as well. Came close to a couple of those. So we're hoping that we're going to be spending a lot more time this fall and the winter on these three areas so we can get some things done in those areas. And again, I think all three of those are beginning stages for those bills, but they're good starts.
I do find it interesting, and again, I mentioned the formula when it comes to education, and it's something I'll throw out there. I've had conversations on this program with communities like Brockton and the New Bedfords, where they had the equity, and they've been talking about equity in education and possibly putting forth an update to the Ed Reform Bill Act from 1993, and wanted to see that revamped or, you know, more funding. So my understanding is that this legislation is something that could help offset that,
changing the formula really will help all other communities other than the inner cities in a big way. And you look at a community like Plymouth that we represent, their underfunded mandate is close to $20 million a year. Do I need to say anything more?
No.
No,
but it's worth noting and discussing. And like I said, I want to say 2 months ago, I had a group of folks in here, educators locally, and we talked about it. And I had one passionate school committee member who was, you know, every year their community is seeing a deficit when it comes to funding education.
Right.
And another regional community I'm watching is there's a fight over not making sure. I guess there was some act in regards to a regional agreement that changes that after 2007 as to the number of students that you have, where that kind of went away, depending on if you check the box in town meeting. And that's a conversation that we'll probably be having here on Monday Night Talk as we try to bring some of those folks in.
Kathy and I went to the Plymouth School Committee a couple of months ago, and it was an interesting stat. Over the last 5 years of their budget, their budget has gone up, I think it was like over $5 or $6 million in a five-year period, yet the state funding of that 5 to 6 year period only went up 1.5. So you could see how much more that's being added to the taxpayers in the town. And that's happening all throughout
the district.
How about you? Anything as far as going on in your district?
In my district, I just wanted to mention
This Thursday,
September 26th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Kingston Intermediate School, there is going to be a four-month, it's called Surprising Seas. And it's about climate change, and they have a great panel, and it's open to everyone. So I just wanted to give a little shout-out for that.
And there's two other things I have, too. First of all, I think Kathy and I will both be here Wednesday evening, 5 to 7, right here at WATD for the annual open house.
Yes, we will.
So we will be here for that. And then on Friday night...
Wait, did you get the invitation out in the hall?
Christine grabbed me on the way in. You're coming, right? I'll be there. No. It's been on our calendars.
And I know Ed's been roaming the hallway, so I didn't know if he's trying to invite anybody who walks
in. No, we've had it on our calendar for a while. Okay. And the last thing I want to mention is To the Moon and Back. As you know, that's the cause for children that are born substance abuse. They're having the second annual adult prom this Friday night. At the Alden Park,
which is a lovely restaurant.
It's a great event. Tickets, you can go to their website. Tickets are on sale, but it's a great time, and they raise some good money for a good cause.
Any other events coming up for the Plymouth 400? Because I know this is the time of year that things are going to start happening. Anything that on your calendar that we want to make sure we remind folks?
Nothing yet. The first big event will be April 24th. But what's happening this year for the Thanksgiving Day Parade, for the first time, PAC-TV is not going to be airing it. Channel 5 has a contract with the Thanksgiving Day Parade for the next 3 years. So Channel 5 will be carrying the parade.
Wait, did anybody talk to Donna and Ollie?
Ollie's well aware, obviously, because he runs it.
Okay.
And Donna and the group at PAC-TV are aware. They're going to help out in a little ways, but it won't be aired on that day. It'll be aired on Thanksgiving. And then the next 2 years, they'll be airing it on that day live. They'll be carrying it live. So,
I'm kind of disappointed because I look forward to watching it. I'm a big supporter of, yeah, of public access.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the folks down at PAC TV do a fantastic job.
Great parade that they do. Yeah.
Well, not just that, because let's not forget, you have a show. I'm trying to get Rep Lenatra to do her own show eventually. Knowing that PAC, you should drag her into.
Rep Calta had one. He had a show.
Did he?
Yeah.
We should brainstorm here. What would we call Rep Lenatra's show?
Yeah, think about that.
I'm thinking a day in the district, and we talked about that. Have it be mobile, so it's not.
Yeah, do like little vignettes, like I've been telling you to do.
Yes.
Well, not telling you, but suggesting.
Yes.
You and your new aide. But see, you should do like a sit-down State Matters with Representative Matt Muratori. It's a fantastic show. And it's not just like stuffy in district stuff. He's had all kinds of different. I know because I'm a fan of his show.
Yeah, and you know why I do it too, because I like learning about things. And so for me, I love having guests on, like, you know, secretaries and other people. And I had a guest on from the Whale Conservatory recently. I learned so much.
That was fantastic.
About that. Yeah, it was a good show. I get excited because I learn about all this stuff and what they do. So I'm a person that likes to know both sides of an issue, and that's how I get to learn it.
And the set's kind of comfy. You get these big marshmallow chairs. You'd like it. It is. It's a cozy set. Yeah.
I am going to be on tomorrow with Julie Thompson, so I'll have to check out your
executive
set.
Executive director of PAC TV.
Yes. Yes,
tell that's a different studio.
Oh, is it a different
tell
studio?
Tell to show you my studio.
I will ask to see your studio.
So you're on with Julie.
I'm on with Julie.
Yeah. Are you doing PCN Life or are you doing something else?
I'm not really sure, to be honest.
They didn't tell you?
No.
Probably.
It's
if it's Julie, it probably is. It's got PCN.
It's either PC. It's a PAC Community News or it's PC. They got another side project called PCN Life, which is really good too.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah.
I strongly suggested that they sit down and create a program for you.
Okay.
They will too.
Because you do a great job.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Seeing that you're going to be the MC of next year's Dance with the Dignitaries.
Exactly right.
Maybe we can get Matt to dance again.
And they show in Kingston and Plymouth, but the other communities will carry it as well if you're on it.
Oh, great.
So, it's not the old, like the old days where you had to have it on VHS.
Yeah.
You pedal it around or bicycle it around to other access centers. There's a server. Actually, it's an uploading system that is shared across the country.
Yeah. People can pick it up. Yeah. When I had Secretary Ash on, I think that was the highest one we ever had that went to, I want to say, like 70 or 80 different communities.
Wow, that's amazing.
Picked up on it, yeah.
It is amazing. Yeah. And it's just a tease that I do a little side production, as you know.
As I know, yes.
A beach show that's 40 plus communities across the country, 7 states, including, there's a Department of Corrections. I guess they watch TV in prison, but they download it and they watch it faithfully.
Wow!
All about bees.
Wow!
Watching bees can kind of calm you down. So to speak.
I guess it would.
If folks want to find out more about some of the stuff that you're working on, are you doing in district, Representative Lenatra?
They can visit my website, which is KathyLenatra.com. They can go to my Facebook page. They can call me at the State House or my legislative aide. His name is Chris Jean. He's also available as well.
Representative Muratori.
Yeah, same thing. My website, MattMuratori.com, and Facebook, Twitter. You always find a lot of good stuff on there.
Yes, and of course, if you don't know, State Matters. You can see it on PAC TV if you're not sure. Go to the PAC TV's website, and they usually have a nice little schedule. Unless you live in the four communities.
I will be doing that this evening.
Yeah. You should be able to.
Next month, we're doing a show this week that's going to air next month. It's going to be on the National Weather Service and how that works.
Really?
Yeah. Are you going to have Rob Gilman be a part of it? Good evening. Just kidding. I want to thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
Yeah, pleasure.
I appreciate the co-hosting, per se, to start out, Representative Lenatra.
My pleasure. Anytime.
I got to get that jacket.
Yeah.
I definitely like that blazer. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Haley Duff. Of course, she is the author of The Real Girls Kitchen. In just a few moments, you are listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATV. Stay tuned, please.
is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Representative David DeCoste and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Now, before I introduce our next guest, just a quick note. Did you know that 76% of parents say it's important to enjoy meals together as a family? But finding the time and the right ingredients for a healthy meal can be challenging. Now, as you may or may not know, September is National Family Meals Month, a month dedicated to promoting the benefits of spending more family time around the table while enjoying nutritious meals. Now, joining us is mother, actress, and author of the Real Girls Kitchen blog, Haley Duff, who knows what it's like taking care of a family on the go. She joins us with some favorite recipe ideas. Haley, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Big fan of not only some of the things you've done musically and as someone who's done TV shows on the Cooking Channel, but also somebody who loves eating and loves eating healthy. So I'm a fan of what you do.
Awesome. Thank you.
And myself being a family man, this is also an important topic as well. I know that you are a huge advocate of healthy eating and family mealtime. Tell us why both are so important to you.
Well, for me, I have two little girls, and feeding my family good, nutritious meals that taste delicious too is really important. It teaches them, you know, growing up, how to feed themselves well. And also it gets us around the dinner table together more, which we're always, you know, running every different direction. You said you're a family man. I'm sure you experience the same thing. It's hard to get everybody together and sit down and focus on each other. So, you know, making a really great meal at dinner time that's got good, nutritious ingredients, people tend to stay in the kitchen a little bit longer with each other, which is what I'm always striving for.
Indeed. And so you have a few examples of healthy options in front of you. What are they?
I do. Yes, I have three recipes from the American Heart Association, and they feature one of my favorite ingredients, one of my favorite things to eat, Eggland's Best Eggs. One of them is a spinach bake. It's a very simple recipe. And then the other two are deviled eggs. They're a buffalo deviled egg bite. And then the second one is probably my favorite. It's a bacon and turkey, a turkey bacon and cheddar deviled egg. And they're really easy, simple recipes. They don't take a long time to make and really good for you.
So I would ask you, is part of the healthy eating, is it some of it having a flexitarian or vegetarian spin on it? Or is it just a matter of how you choose your meals and putting them together?
Well, I think just always striving for balance in your meals, but also using really wonderful ingredients. So that's one thing that I really try to focus on with my family is picking ingredients that are superior ingredients. Like EB, for example, their eggs are six times more vitamin D than other eggs, 25% less saturated fat than other eggs. They have double the vitamin B12, double the omega-3. So I feed my family something that tastes great, but I also is really good for them too. And I think that's a great way to boost nutrition in a really simple recipe.
Okay, so as a mom, how do you suggest building lifelong healthy habits for your kids, where it's not something that they do sporadically, but it's something that's part of their daily habits?
Well, for me, it's getting my girls into the kitchen with me. You know, my four-year-old has now become a very picky eater. So anytime that I can get her cooking with me in the kitchen, she tends to be a little more open to trying things because she helped make it, so she's excited to eat it. And that's something that I think is kind of a great, like, parent trick of getting your kids excited about healthy eating or even eating in general. Sometimes I can't wrangle my kids to get to the dinner table at all.
So give us an example of something that you've been able to have one of your girls really get excited about where maybe they weren't so enthusiastic initially.
Honestly, the spinach bake is a great example of a recipe like that because it's similar to a quiche. And my younger one, my one-year-old, into it. My four-year-old, a little more nervous about what it was.
Okay.
And when I got her into the kitchen and told her she was going to be able to whisk the eggs and pour in some cream and, you know, really got her involved, all of a sudden she realized, oh, these are all ingredients that I know and I'm familiar with, and then ended up eating her whole meal. So, you know, sometimes it's just breaking it down by ingredient, and then they're a little more comfortable with trying things.
Again, we are speaking with actress, wife, and mom, Haley Duff, who started a food blog called The Real Girls Kitchen. That is realgirlskitchen.com, which spawned its own cookbook and TV series on the cooking channel. Now, you recently teamed up with an organization to bring awareness to family mealtime. Could you tell us about that?
I did. I just teamed up with Eggland's Best and the American Heart Association for their Better Family Meals program, which is really focusing on educating people about quality time with their families and making nutritious meals. And they've also teamed up with Sur La Table for cooking classes, which I'm very excited about. They go through December. And you can sign up on egglandsbest.com to get all the information about the program and signing up for classes and also all of these recipes and a few more.
Anything else that you want to say to close out our segment? And again, I thank you, Haley, for joining us in regards to celebrating National Family Meals Month.
No, I think that's it. Just thank you for having me, and check out some of my recipes on egglandsbest.com and enjoy Family Meal Month.
Absolutely. And again, don't also forget to check out her her blog, realgirlskitchen.com, where you can learn about some of the things. And if you want, you can also subscribe to the latest RGK news. You'll see it right on the homepage. Once again, Haley, thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin.
Again, that was our guest, Haley Duff. And as I kind of teased it earlier on in the program, actress, wife, mom. When you think actress, the first thing that comes to mind is the Lizzie McGuire movie, Napoleon Dynamite. Remember, she was Summer. Don't forget, vote for Summer. Summer Wheatley. Oddly enough, I believe Napoleon Dynamite has turned 15 years old. But she also starred in another movie called Material Girls. Remember that movie? Here's a quick clip.
You still look pretty great to me.
Well, my mom was a model, so looking great was considered a genetic requirement.
Where is your mom anyway?
She's in Europe with an Egyptian prince. She changed her name to Isis, and she calls us her cousins.
Hmm.
We get emails every few years. You want to know something really funny, though? I can remember living in this teeny tiny little walk-up and being really happy. I mean, Tansy doesn't remember that, but I totally do.
Yeah, that's a scene from Material Girls that was released back in 2006 with Hayley Duff playing Ava. She's speaking with Henry. It was played by Luke Haas, as both Hayley and Hillary are two Hollywood socialites, and I guess their family's cosmetic business comes into a problem or an issue, per se, and they enlist in the help of Henry. And let's not forget how talented Hayley and her sister Hillary are, as they are also musicians. Right there, a rendition of Our Lips Are Sealed, done by Hayley and her younger sister, Hillary Duff. Very talented Hayley Duff being our guest this evening. We thank her for joining us. We are going to step aside, and when we come back, hour number two of Monday Night Talk, right here at 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
Every Monday night at 8, stay tuned to 95.9 WATD for Crossjack Radio.
We're your hosts, Alex Bazanson, Andy Bernstein, and two-time Stanley Cup winner, Kevin Stevens.
Our mission at Crosscheck Radio is to end the stigma of substance abuse through media, outreach, and awareness.
Each week, we deliver relevant content, celebrity and notable guests, and useful information in our discussions about addiction and substance abuse.
Tune in to Crosscheck Radio tonight at 8, here on 95.9 WATD. Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Hey, we are back for the second hour of Monday Night Talk. Later this hour, Matt Dyer, Forester for Urban and Community Forestry with Department of Conservation and Recreation. He's actually here right now, just hanging out waiting his turn, but we're going to find a way to shorten that title. But he's a forester, and we're going to talk a little bit about the greening of gateway cities. It's a program that's being done here in the Commonwealth, and Matt is aptly going to talk a little bit about that. And we're going to use the subject will be the city of Brockton, New Bedford, some of this stuff here on the southeastern corridor of the state. So Matt, we'll talk about that, the importance of planting trees in our urban centers. Looking forward to that conversation. But right now, you know, it's something that we're dealing with this time of year. It usually starts late July, early August. The watch first news reports that there's been testing done in regards to mosquitoes that might have arbovirus, whether it's a mosquito-borne diseases like Eastern Equine Encephalitis or the West Nile virus. To me, it seems as though this year has been a lot more severe than in past years, but we have folks here who can tell me the contrary and also your best ways to protect yourself. We still have not had not one but two hard frosts, so you have to protect yourself. You have to be vigilant when it comes to your activities in the dark. You know, dawn to dusk is, you know, you're somewhat safe, but I'm sure the experts will tell us otherwise. But you want to make sure you're protecting yourself, what the clothing is, what you're using. Some of the folks who are going to be joining us, we have Kimberly King, who is a public health expert. She is here in studio. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, how are you, Kevin?
Pretty good. I worked with Kimberly to kind of put this together as well. We have Art Borden. Art is the chair of the Carver Board of Health. Hey, welcome, Kevin, to the show, sir. How are you?
Good, thanks.
And then we're going to have two callers on the line. We're going to be swapping off. We'll start with Dan Daly, who is a community liaison with the Plymouth County Mosquito Control. He is on the line now. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Kevin. And let me say hi to Kim and Arthur as well. I know them both. Hey, and, you know, and just great guests for you to have. As you know, I have a commitment in Cohasset tonight, or I'd be there with you, and I really appreciate you giving me the opportunity to come on.
I haven't known that you have limited time. I guess the first thing I would ask you is, looking and seeing that regular news reports, we know that we've seen a high number of incidents when it comes to Tripoli. The deaths have been a little bit higher than we're used to seeing. And I know that I've had you on, and know that you have willingly had conversations with any media outlet that'd be willing to have a conversation about the importance of protecting yourself when you are out and about. I mean, if you could kind of limit your activities at night and stay inside, so be it. But some folks aren't that fortunate. What are you saying to folks, or what are folks asking you in regards to sharing information when it comes to protecting themselves?
Well, before I talk about repellents, and that's an important topic for us to have, I'd like to mention just a couple of things from Plymouth County Mosquito Control. I think most people know that we're no longer spraying individual properties, but instead we're doing wide area spraying. With so much virus in the county, it's so much more effective for us to do sections of communities rather than a patchwork of individual homes. And currently we're answering requests from boards of health agents, and schools. We have several schools on board for this week. But, you know, pretty soon the weather's going to change. I thought it had 2 weeks ago, but I guess I was wrong on that. And the overnight temperatures are going to dip. And once we go below 50 degrees as an overnight temperature, we can't do any more spraying at all. The label on most products used for spraying for mosquitoes, say 50 degrees is the bottom. After that, you can't use the product anymore, which means people are going to have to depend on repellents in the way they dress for personal protection. And you mentioned the hard frost. That could be some time away. I mean, that is when the temperature drops below 28 degrees for 3 or more hours. And I don't know. I don't know when that's going to happen, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be anytime soon. So, you know, people really need to look for repellents that have an EPA registration number on them, which means they've been tested, they work, and if you follow the directions, they're safe for human use. The problem is, if people are looking for more, they might not find as many on the shelves as they would have in July and August. Some of the stores are changing their seasonal items. I was actually at a pharmacy in one of the critical risk towns that had taken all of their repellents off the shelf. And when I talked to them about it, they said, well, yeah, we brought a few out because the people weren't happy about that. They wanted us to bring them back out, which they did. And I have to say to Arthur, in Carver, you should be very happy with that supermarket in North Carver. They have a wonderful group of repellents for people to use. The last time I was there, they had DEET, they had Picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, and PMD, which is a synthetic version of oil of lemon eucalyptus, and in significant quantities. So if people need to restock some repellent, I'm saying they're probably, if you look at supermarkets or sporting goods stores, you're probably going to have a wider variety to choose from. The stores that are the discount stores, the chain stores, they're probably moving product around, getting ready for Halloween. Mm-hmm. However, I think it's really important that people do look, and it's for the EPA registration label, and it's normally on the back near the bottom in very fine print. You see that registration number. So whether it's DEET, Picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, or PMD, you know it's going to work for you. And even as we get chillier and the sweaters come on, until that hard frost, you need to use these things on any skin that is exposed.
All right, do you want to kind of give your thoughts into getting the thumbs up from Dan as far as product?
Yeah, absolutely. That'll be something I can put on our social media pages first thing in the morning. So.
All right, great.
Well, now, I got to ask you, Art, real quick, and that is where is your area in regards to high risk? Is it one of the highest risk?
We were one of the first towns to go critical. Within 17 days of the first reported sighting of Triple E, we went from moderate to critical.
And how does that tax, the health department? And knowing that you got to make a decision whether you want to curtail activity, especially you got high school starting and sporting events.
We immediately, this is back in mid-July that it first happened. We immediately, the three board members got together and determined that we weren't going to mess around this year. We're going right to a curfew, dusk to dawn. And the last go around, we had developed a spray to play policy where we allowed the sports to continue. Kids had to be sprayed before they went on the field for games or practice or whatever. And we let that go for a few weeks till we went to critical. And we immediately revoked that portion of the ban, notified the high school that they were going to have to change their sports schedule completely, that there was going to be no activity on any of the town fields. And we started with dusk to dawn, and we determined we would consider that half an hour before sunset, half an hour after sunrise. Along the way, somebody criticized us, said, well, that's not what Webster says. And I responded, well, Webster wasn't dealing with Triple E. We are, and this is our definition. Within a couple of weeks, we were still finding people out on our playground after what was going to be curfew. So once again, we made the decision, okay, we're going to go to a time-specific curfew, 6 p.m., to 7 a.m., and that'll run through the end of September. And what we'll do is we'll reevaluate what the dusk and sunset sunrise and sunset is going to be at the end of October. And we'll adjust our ban for the entire month. We're not going to do it a day at a time or a week at a time. Whatever it works out to be at the end of October will be a half an hour before sunset, half an hour after sunrise. It might be, you know, it might be 5 to 7 or 5 to 8, whatever it's going to be. That's what we're going to do.
Dan, I know you're at an event, and you anything you want to say in regards to what Art was mentioning about their predicament? And does it sound familiar that there are other communities that are probably dealing with the same thing that Carver had to when making decisions like this?
Oh, absolutely. And I think Carver was the most proactive, aggressive community and really moving on this particular issue. I've had an opportunity to talk to people at the high school, and they are so on board with what the Board of Health wants to do. And I think they're a role model community. This is how things ought to happen. Now, I have to admit, I did live in Carver for 38 years, so maybe there's a little bit of bias there.
Kim, we didn't have a chance to introduce you and have you weigh in. Again, you're somebody who is, you're in a lot of these meetings, whether it's here on the local level or on the state level. You're somebody who, at the Department of Public Health, you have conversations with. What are you, what's your thoughts on this situation at this particular time?
Are you still talking to me or Kimberly?
No, I'm talking to Kimberly right now.
All right, just I thought so. Just real quick.
No, how are you, Dan?
And I'm glad, good, Kim.
I was glad you could come on the show.
Thank you.
It's a serious disease. It needs to be taken seriously. And there were a lot of mistakes the last 14 years. As many people know, I got involved because I lost my child to Tripoli. And unfortunately, the virus amplified across the state this year because of the abuse of 333 CMR, which is the no sprays. Audubon and the Land Trust have put all their properties as the no spray. And what most people don't realize is that the no sprays only affect the organized state mosquito control that are trying to protect public health. And it doesn't stop the homeowner that abuts the property others from hiring a commercial applicator or a private applicator from coming and spraying their home. It only stops the state and the local mosquito control projects from controlling Culex marinora, which is the mosquito species responsible for establishing Tripoli in the environment. And we really need to go back to being able to larvicide those areas. And we need to start controlling the virus in the epicenters.
Dan, I would ask you probably the final question I'll ask you so you can go to your event. If folks wanted to, I know you've already mentioned about spraying and you know, singular home sprayings, but I would think that if folks aren't sure as to what to look for when it comes to their property, as to if there are still breeding grounds for mosquitoes, couldn't they call the mosquito control, the Plymouth County Mosquito Control Unit, to take a look at their property to look for any signs that maybe they might have standing water and stuff like that?
You know, Kevin, that's a great last question for me. Yeah, they absolutely can call us. And if they suspect there's a breeding site nearby that maybe we don't know about, we should come out and check it, and we can still take action on that particular site. And the follow-up to that is, one of the favorite breeding sites for a lot of species of mosquitoes are tires. And we have a program. If people have tires on their property and they want to get rid of them, because they are breeding sites, so we're there for you. We will come to your property and we will take those tires free of charge and get rid of them, and we've eliminated a great breeding site for mosquitoes.
Dan, we want to thank you. I wish we could have had you here in studio, but I think the conversation, the information that you're sharing, and that Art and Kimberly and Rajiv soon will share, will be at least something that we can at least inform our listeners with.
All right. Well, thank you, and good night to all of you.
Thank you so much, sir. I don't know why, but somebody's trying to call me while I'm on the air. It does happen. Now, who are we expecting to call shortly, Kimberly?
Rajiv is a medical entomologist.
How do you say his last name? Okay. we'll go with that.
It's Rajiv, medical entomologist, unless I see him in person, and he's used to it. Mm-hmm. I talked to him earlier, and he was very cool about it. Just introduced me as Rajiv, medical entomologist. But he's an expert from out of state. He studies arboviruses, and he works with mosquito control and abatement programs and ghost rights folks, publications for them for research. And he also wrote me my expert testimony 2 weeks ago to give to the legislator to start the process of being able to bring back larviciding in the state of Massachusetts, because it's extremely needed.
All right, I would ask you is how long have you been on the Board of Health?
20 years now.
20 years. Kimberly says that somehow there's oversight. What's, in your professional opinion, what are you hearing from the DPH as to why we are seeing so many positive cases of Tripoli, and we're seeing people getting sick from Tripoli and West Nile virus?
The only thing I've seen so far is the attributed to the extremely wet spring and the extremely warm
winter.
June. July.
Okay.
So the combination of the two things just, you know, ramped everything up from actually a little earlier than what it's usually expected.
Does this happen in cycles, though? Do you guys, either of you know, does this happen with the Triple E and the West Nile spikes? Do these happen? Is it cyclical where we'll see some seasons where we're seeing a lot of positive, you know, the mosquitoes that are trapped, that you're seeing a high quantity that are testing positive compared to some years?
I've seen or read that it's like a seven or eight year cycle, that it's kind of on the back burner, then it'll pop up like it did this year, and it will probably be worse next year.
Goodness. And now, somebody who knows you, your Adriana, your daughter, you lost 14 years ago. Are folks confused as to what the symptoms could be if they did contract Triple E or West Nile virus?
Yes. When Adriana got sick, we asked her to be tested. And her pediatrician actually told me I was paranoid and sent us home with a diagnosis of summer flu. If you have extreme headache, stiff neck, and you're lethargic, you're most likely suffering from a vector-borne disease. It doesn't have to be a mosquito, but there's a lot of misdiagnosis from it until it's too late.
And do we know if there's any treatment for this?
There's only comfort care for mosquito-borne viruses. There's no cure, there's no vaccine, there's no antibiotics.
It's a brain disease, correct?
Yes.
My goodness. But most of the fatalities that we've seen, have we seen any here on the South Shore other than the South Coast? Because there were a couple of instances on the South Coast.
I think the last death was in Freetown. There was one in
Fairhaven.
Yeah. I mean, we're definitely in the hot spot for it. If you look at the map that DPH puts out, and where the critical areas are, I mean, Carver, Middleborough, right dead center in the epicenter.
I mean, you and your department, and I'm sure many of the health officials around the state are watching the weather and hoping. I mean, today, knowing it's the first day of fall, was no help to see a warm 80-degree day, knowing that it's probably not going to be that chilly tonight or the next couple of nights.
Right, that's our biggest fear, is that the people are taking it not seriously enough. They're excited about the aerial spraying going to kill all the mosquitoes, and we know it doesn't. And we keep trying to tell them that. We keep trying to promote, you know, the personal protection when they're outside, long sleeves, long pants, cover up, you know, if you have to be outside. If you don't have to, then don't. But
any idea as to how effective that? Because there've been numerous rounds of spraying, right? That the state has done. Any idea how effective that spraying has been? Can they gauge it?
The only thing I've seen and read is that it targets the pretty much like the airborne mosquitoes at the time. That's why they spray. You know, they start like 7 or after and go most of the evening. They've done Plymouth County, I think they're on their third round, Plymouth and Bristol County. And there's a little bit of a let up, and then within a week or so, they're right back again.
My goodness. Now, you've been a part of conversations on the state level. What are some of the things state officials are saying, Kim, in regards to this? The epidemic proportions of epidemic proportions, or is it not there yet?
We haven't seen an outbreak like this since 1950. It's definitely of epic proportions, and they're ready to act. There's political will to get it done, no matter the cost. The governor, as everybody probably saw his press conference, has promised funding to do it. There's going to be a great deal of winter workshops, and a lot of change that's going to take place, and hopefully we'll be better prepared for the spring.
Is that what we need to do, is learn from this year to prepare for next year?
This year wouldn't have happened if we were allowed to larvicide hundreds of thousands of acres and control the Culex melanora.
What is that? But the, what does that entail, and what kind of money is that?
The mosquito control projects did it up until 2016. It's a part of their budget. They actually receive $100,000 of supplemental funding every year for the past 11 years to get it done. It's no extra cost to Plymouth County because they own their own plane and they have a pilot. Bristol and Norfolk County usually hire a helicopter to come in, but it's always been a part of their budgets. It entails putting a larvicide, which is not at a delta site, it's very target specific, into the hardwood swamps where the mosquito species responsible for establishing AAA are, so that we don't continue to breed abundant amounts of mosquitoes, because when we have an abundant amount of mosquitoes, they bite the birds, more become affected, and that cycle continues, and then the birds fly, and certain species of mosquitoes can fly up to 25 miles. So we just continue to amplify the virus out. And it, they lay and they hatch in new hardwood swamps, and then they more infected birds, and then they just go. And that's why we've seen the amplification that we saw this year, because we were blocked from being able to protect public health.
All right, what would your, any follow-up or anything you'd like to add in addition to what Kimberly just said?
No, I agree 100%. I think they know where these breeding grounds are. And to my feeling is that they shouldn't be waiting for this to happen. They know it's a problem. It would seem like, you know,
more of a reactive than a proactive approach?
Absolutely, yeah.
What can be done? What can be done on a local level to resonate with state officials? Can anything be done by the local health agents or health boards to mobilize and have more, be more proactive next year?
That's a good
question.
I know
I might be just asking a rhetorical question, because yeah. Who knows?
Well, we've learned and we've developed protocol for going forward, so that, you know, for some reason, if I'm voted out or one of the other, you know, so for some reason, if, you know, a different board makeup, there'll be a written protocol in place that, you know, first sign, this is what you got to do. As the risk increases, this is what you got to do. This is what you got to change. The hardest problem we're having is we can only apply our ban and curfew to town property. I mean, if the neighbors want to go out and sit around their campfire at night, we can warn them that, you know, you shouldn't do it, but we can't force them to stay inside.
Very interesting. It definitely is interesting, and you would think that people would want to heed the warning, knowing that it could have a deadly outcome if, in fact, someone has the fortune or the misfortune of being bit by an infected mosquito. And you've kind of said, I think it's some of the information that you passed me along, is we're worried about this here regionally. Is this something that could be more affected across the country come with time, or is it just more prevalent to our area?
Eastern Aquifline is more prevalent to our area, but there are multiple arboviral diseases across the country. West Nile's across the country. It was introduced in 99 in New York. Dallas, Texas wasn't prepared for it, and 4,500 people died until they put a proactive mosquito abatement program in and before they put aircraft up. There's Western Aquifline, there's St. Louis encephalitis. There's multiple diseases on where you travel that mosquitoes transmit, and it's really worldwide when you think about dengue, malaria.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, millions of people are affected every year by mosquitoes.
And don't know it. By a tiny little creature. It's very, very interesting. All right, anything you want to say in closing, sir?
No, I just you know, heed the advice of the boards of health. If you have to be out at night, long sleeves, long pants, spray. And even in the daytime, I've been making it clear on our pages in Carver that mosquitoes are 24/7.
Yeah, they don't just go, oh, it's dark out, let's go.
Yeah, they don't have a clock that says, okay, it's dark, let's go out and bite people. They're out 24/7. You need to take precaution anytime you're outside of your house. all day long.
Definitely good advice. Is there a website for Carver Board of Health, or do you have a town page?
We are on the town page, the Town of Carver page. You can find us on the Board of Health. A copy of our ban is there. Copy of information regarding Triple E is there. We're also one of the smaller areas that also have, we tested for West Nile, so that has kind of fallen to the back because of the Triple E issue, but Carver was also tested for and shown to have a problem with West Nile.
Well, we hope your community and many of the communities here in the South Shore and across the Commonwealth safe bidding, and hopefully there are no more, we don't have any further people getting infected by Triple E or West Nile virus or any more fatalities. Heaven knows we don't want to see that. Kim, anything you want to say in closing? I want to, before I give you your last words, thank you for assisting and putting this together to have a good conversation that we didn't have, Rajiv, but I'm sure we can. This threat is far from over, and maybe we might want to have a couple more conversations about this.
He's in a different time zone, so I wouldn't be surprised if he calls in an hour, Kevin.
Okay, I'll let the notes, I'll let the folks know from the folks who are following us at the 8 o'clock cross check with two-time NHL Stanley Cup winner Kevin Stevens, Alex Bazanson, and Andy Bernstein coming up following Monday Night Talk. But I'll tell them, beware at around 8:30 if you get a phone call from someone who wants to talk about mosquitoes. It's nothing personal.
No, it is. But folks really need to take precautions. I mean, they tell you that it's dusk to dawn, but it's really not. There's day biters out there. We have... My kids and I, we have mosquitoes when we're at the bus stop. And you're out there in enough time. You can get bit walking to the mailbox. You need to spray with an EPA-registered repellent that works for you. If DEET doesn't work, try Picarin. And if neither one of those work, try Lemna Eucalyptus. Find something that works for you. Eliminate water. Don't forget your downspouts and your gutters, especially this time of year. Because mosquitoes overwinter, too. And as the temps start to drop, they're going to start looking for homes to overwinter.
Can't have that.
No. And a lot of people don't realize is you can contract West Nile virus in the winter, too, if they find a home in your basement and things like that. So you really want to take precautions.
Thank you so much, Kimberly King, for joining us. Also, Mr. Art Borden, for being my guest. And Dan Daly, community liaison, joining us here on Monday Night Talk. We'll definitely try to see if we can have another conversation before either the first or second frost, hard frost. We are going to step aside just for a moment, and when we return, the final segment of Monday Night Talk, awaiting in the wings, Matt Dyer will be my final guest here. You're listening to Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Tiny and Sons, Tiny and Sons do glass. Tiny and Sons, Tiny and Sons do glass. If you windshield, she go whack. Tiny and Sons do glass. 888-64-TINYs. Tiny and Sons do glass.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right. Final segment of Monday Night Talk. Again, cross-check radio coming up at 8 o'clock. Stay tuned for that. But don't change your dial. We still have more conversation here. Mr. Matt Dyer, who is a forester. How does one become a forester, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. And first of all, thank you very much for having us on the air. So for someone that aspires to be a forester, it was definitely not a career track on my radar necessarily, but it was an opportunity that I took and I pursued, and I love every day of it. So how one becomes a forester is by going to school and getting a degree in forestry or something along in that field, natural resources.
So a part of our conversation here is to talk about a new initiative. This is the Greening the Gateway Cities. Why is it so important to put trees in cities?
Absolutely. So what happened a few years back, I don't know if you remember the Asian longhorn beetle infestation that took place here in the Northeast, mm-hmm. especially in Worcester. And for those who are listening that don't know what an Asian longhorn beetle is, it's an invasive bug that doesn't have any natural predators. So
did somebody illegally bring it into the country or something?
I don't think it was illegally brought.
It might have accidentally. Right
they're hitchhikers all the time. So what happened was this bug got into Worcester, and what happens is they bore into the tree to lay their eggs, and as they bore into the tree, they'll actually kill the tree. And then what happens is you'll have a bunch of dead trees in these urban settings, and they'll become a hazard. And what happened was they cut down all the trees to try to eradicate the invasive bug. And when they did that, they noticed that there was a big spike in energy consumption, wind speeds picked up, and the quality of life in Worcester, you know, started to diminish a little bit because people had to spend more money to heat their houses, had to spend more money to cool their houses. There was more flooding, more wind. So DCR and other agencies all pitched in and replanted in Worcester. And they said, well, this is a really good idea. Trees, they actually really do matter, not only for health benefits and beauty, but also for energy consumption. So in 2014, the Greening the Gateway Cities project started up in Holyoke and Chelsea. By planting free, and you heard that right, free trees on both public and private property to increase tree canopy cover to reduce energy costs for homeowners and businesses.
Yeah, so I got here, and I don't know if you can correct me if I'm wrong, 14 gateway cities.
Absolutely.
That are part of this. And is it you just go and you plant any type of a tree? What goes into deciding what native tree to plant?
Well, we're not only planting native trees, we're also planting trees that are found all around the world. But, you know, the principles of right tree for the right place. So you would definitely want to look above you. You want to make sure you're not planting any trees that are going to hit any wires. You don't want any root systems going into any foundations. You want to make sure you check your underground utilities by calling 811, which is Dig Safe, and they'll come out and they'll mark out your...
Oh God, they get their own number?
They do.
God
it's
bless them.
811. Really simple, and it's the law to check to make sure where you're digging doesn't have any underground utilities like cable, electricity, sewage, natural gas.
So I did a story, I don't know if it was like a year or two ago, where the city of Brockton, which is undergoing a revitalization, not only in the city center, but around that community. And one of the things that late Mayor Bill Carpenter tried to institute was various programs. And one of them was the Greening of the Gateways initiative, where they were picking, they actually had planted, am I correct, over 1,000 trees?
Yes, correct. So as of today, we have planted over 1,800 trees in the city of Brockton.
Goodness.
And our goal is to plant 2,400 trees in the next couple of seasons. And why we are saying 2,400 is we have about 800 acres of land in Brockton where we have identified that this area could really use some trees. And by planting 2,400 trees, we're going to increase the tree canopy cover by 5%. And it might not sound like a lot, but that can help residents save money of $400 annually on benefits from these trees.
How important is it that local legislators, I'm talking about you folks who are on the zoning board, who are on the planning board, your city councilors, your mayor, are on board and aware of this program so that if you have a developer that comes in, that they're not actually cutting down your work and removing your work?
Absolutely. We've had the pleasure of working in Brockton, and everyone over in Brockton has been wonderful to work with. There's a great community out there. And when there's new projects coming up, we have the planning board or the planning department saying, oh, wait, you might qualify for free trees. Or the guys at the DPW may say, hey, you qualify for free trees on your property. So there's a really great community. Everyone's involved. And you have the word of mouth really benefiting the program here in the city.
So is it not just the city? Let's say it's a resident saying, hey, I wouldn't mind having a couple of trees planted. Could they contact either city officials or the Department of Conservation and Recreation and say, hey, I wouldn't mind if you planted a few trees in my yard?
Absolutely. And that's actually the whole purpose of this program, is to plant 80% of our trees on private property. Mm. And the trees can go in your front yard as well as your backyard. As long as you're okay with it and it's the right tree for the right place, one of the foresters will come out. All you have to do is call 617-626-1503 for the city of Brockton, or visit maurbancanopy.org, and you can sign up right there online. And that's for all the gateway cities, including Quincy, Fall River, New Bedford, and everyone outside of the South Shore.
And how many trees would you say have been planted statewide? Do you have that number since this program has been initiated?
Yes, Governor Baker actually celebrated with our department and our team of
planting. He's an arborist?
Of 20,000 trees. And so that ceremony took place over in Quincy. And, you know, we got the marching orders from him to plant another 20,000. So we're really thrilled.
What's it like for you? How rewarding is it for you as a forester to see this program moving forward? Because myself, I worry about not only my carbon footprint, I worry about day by day I'll drive by somewhere where there is conservation land or there's where there are trees and there's wildlife and it's being cleared to build another house. How does it feel to you to see that there's an effort to put back what we have removed?
It's been a great legacy, and to be able to live this legacy of making a difference in the community of Brockton has been a wonderful experience. And it's really a great program because we hire local residents who live in Brockton or in the local communities who may just think a tree is a tree. And not only from the experience of planting these trees, but from hiring these people and seeing how they progress and see how they go, a tree is a tree, to, oh yeah, that's a sugar maple over there, and that's a sweet gum over there, and here's the different soil types that they like, has been a really rewarding project for not only myself, but the other co-forester, Kyle Reisner.
I didn't happen to see you two at Elvira's one day, did I? An Instagram post, kicking back and enjoying some beverages in downtown Brockton?
Absolutely. that was my lunch break, by the way.
It was.
I was definitely out there. It's been a really rewarding job to be able to get out there and meet the local folks in Brockton. Kind of growing up, just a funny side story, growing up in Hanson, my mother was always afraid of Brockton and, you know, always told us not to go there. And Mom, if you're listening, I don't work in Brockton. I, you know, work up in Newberry Street. But when I took the job, it was intimidating going into Brockton, kind of knowing the reputation. But after working there for almost 3 years, it has been it has changed my mind around 100%. You know, yeah, we have our problems, but all the good work that the folks are doing in Brockton, from the Charity Guild to the churches to other local civic groups, there's a lot of great work going on into Brockton, and there's a great community. So it has been really rewarding.
Where have you found yourself more mainly as far as looking at locations to plant trees, or that you have planted trees? Where have you been kind of targeting more so as of late?
So right at the moment where, for folks who are listening into the program and they don't really know where the planting zone is in Brockton, it's kind of our northern boundary is going to be City Hall. Our eastern boundary is the railroad track down to Brookside Ave or the MBTA maintenance station,
mm-hmm.
over to Longwood Ave and going a little bit north right there. So right now we're focusing on that area to try to get as many trees as we possibly can, like Carroll Ave, VC, Harvard, up near Edgar James Playground.
Yep.
So we're trying to focus all over. So we've got our southern portion of our jurisdiction.
Campello,
yep. So like Campello, Churchill Ave.
Yep.
We've done a great job there. So we're trying to move a little bit closer to City Hall. And that gets tough because you have a lot of multifamily properties where landlords aren't on site or they paved over their lawn. So it kind of gets tough when you were trying to move north. But I know we can do it.
So is there any kind of follow-up by DCR after these are planted? How hands-on are you once they've been planted? Is it a matter of doing a regular check of what has been planted to make sure that your time hasn't been wasted?
That's a great question, because this is an investment in green infrastructure for this community. And in the short term, you know, we're there in the community. If we're driving by and we see someone that's not watering their tree, we leave them a little note saying, hey, by the way, water your tree.
It's the tree police.
You know?
Water your tree.
And, you know, and if people are taking care of their trees and they notice a funny bug or for whatever reason the tree isn't doing well, they actually give us a call, which is great. And we love maintaining relationships with all of our clients so we can go back and say, oh, wait, this is what we can do to remedy the situation. But in the long term, we'll have students from different universities come back and do a mortality study and see how many trees have died. But they also want to measure the growth of how these trees have been doing. And then that way we can kind of see the return on investment. A lot of times with companies planting trees, they have a mortality rate of 50, 60, sometimes even 70% of the trees just dying because they weren't planting properly. So far, from what the study has shown, DCR and our planting crews have a mortality rate of about 20%.
How's that feel?
It feels great. You know, so it's nice to see that the crews are doing what they're supposed to be doing and seeing the results of that.
Well, retention's everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, we're speaking with Matt Dyer. He is a forester with the Urban and Community Forestry with the Department of Conservation and Recreation. And we're talking about planting in gateway cities. This program that's helping to green these gateway cities, and there's a lot of benefits, as Matt had mentioned earlier on, that these canopies help in energy conservation. How many species of trees would you say? Am I limited by saying, though, there's probably just two or three? How many species of tree are at your disposal to plant in these communities?
Absolutely. So every household, they receive a free flowering tree. So that could be your dogwood, that could be Japanese stewardias, could be a redbud. And then you're allowed as many free shade trees. And we have over 50 different varieties of trees that the homeowners can say, I would like a tree here. They can ask our recommendation. Sometimes they've done their homework and they know what kind of tree that they want to put there. And we'll work with the homeowners, businesses, landlords, to make sure that everyone involved is happy. But ultimately, the foresters kind of say, yep, that's a good idea, or maybe that's not the best idea.
So think an acre of land in a community. How many trees could you conceivably plant on that 1 acre? Is there a perfect formula?
Well, it would all depend. Right tree for the right place. You know, you don't know what the site conditions are or whatnot, so I'm not going to answer that one.
Okay. My understanding is that there is a return investment. Am I correct? That's realized in a matter of a decade and a half?
Yeah, absolutely. So it depends on the calculation. Some people just look at energy savings. Some people think of energy wastewater as well as beautification, cleaning the air. So there's different formulas for each one, but there's just so many benefits, it's hard to say, here it is, this is how much money you're going to save from this one tree, because it all depends on what variables you're counting.
Now, how long does DCR maintain operations in Brockton? Is this a long-term investment that you are there, that's home base for you and the DCR?
So right at the moment, we're scheduled to be in Brockton for 3 years. We're coming up to our three-year mark, but I think ultimately they want to keep us there until we reach our goal of 2,400 trees.
Wow. Now, knowing that there's been a change in City Hall, knowing that there's an ongoing city election, does DCR pay attention and have a conversation with the next administration to see if there could be an extension, to see if that administration also has buy-in in the ongoing revitalization of the city, especially when it comes to trees?
Yeah, we'll work with any administration that wants to work with us. And, you know, it's definitely an agreement between the city of Brockton and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts on whether or not they want to keep this program going with the turnover of administration. But I think ultimately everyone agrees that this is a great program. And I wouldn't see, you know, a changeover changing anything there.
So as a forester, what exactly is your job? Is it a matter of you scouting out locations? Is it a matter of you being on site when the tree is being planted? Kind of give me the details as to what you're doing as this is happening. Are you part of the planning process?
All of the above. Oh. So it's kind of being a Swiss Army knife of different traits.
I can see that.
How the program works is we go out to our neighborhoods and we canvass. We actually go door to door talking to folks, telling them about the great benefits of trees, telling them that it's free, trying to make sure that people understand it's not a scheme. It's a real program.
You're trying to make me buy three trees, aren't you?
And
first one's free, yeah.
Right. And then when do I get the bill for the labor? And yeah, it's all free. The trees are free. The labor's free. Everything is free. All the homeowner has to do is promise me that they're going to take good care of the trees. But on a day-to-day, it's getting the crews up and running by, you know, loading on the trees, going out, planting them, making sure that the trees are going to the right house, right spot, but also going door-to-door, as I mentioned, for myself and Kyle Reisner, the other co-forester, ordering the trees, doing long-term planning, talking to different departments, seeing where we can put trees on city property, as well as housing authority, schools, library, health department. So it's been a really great program so far.
Give me the most interesting story you've had to date in regards to doing this, and just something fun. We don't want to, but you know, again, this is with your job. I'm sure that there are interesting stories. Like you said, you go to people's, you talk to people, and what's not to say, like, free? What are you talking about, free? And there's, you know, and at the end of the day, once that first one's planted, they might come back and go, hey, can I get a second or third one planted?
Yeah, so a lot of people are skeptical right off the bat. They just go, yeah, you're just out here and you get paid by the tree, don't you? And it's like, no. I get paid by the hour. You can look up my salary on the open checkbook. I'm a public servant, and I'm just trying to plant trees and better the neighborhoods. But some of my favorite stories have been working with those homeowners that were a hard no, and then having them turn around. They'll see us on the street. They'll say, hi, how are you doing? You know, and then turning that around to
a referral.
Can I look at your book and see what we can do for trees? And it's like, yeah, absolutely. So we've had one person just lately. I remember it was a hard no 3 years ago, and now we finally got a tree in their yard, just one. But
what kind of a tree was it?
They wanted a dogwood.
Okay.
And that's a good start. And I'm hoping that she'll give me a call back maybe next spring and say, Matt, can we plant a few more trees? So it's been a great thing to watch.
Do you look for referrals from some of the folks that you've been able to, the private landowners, would say, hey, would you mind giving us a referral so if there are other residents in the neighborhood or in this part of the city?
Absolutely, because the word of mouth is the most effective way to get our program out there, because we can leave a flyer at your door, we can do mailers, and as I said, people just think, oh yeah, it's just some sort of program. So the word of mouth is really important. Our first season, planting a tree in Churchill Avenue. We planted at this one woman's house, and she was really sweet. She talked to our neighbor about us, so we went to his house. And then we spent the rest of the afternoon just in the Churchill neighborhood citing trees because he knew everyone in the neighborhood. So word of mouth is very important.
What was that like for you?
It just was like, oh, here it is. It's here it is. We're going. Here it is. We're going to start planting a bunch of trees in Churchill Avenue. We're starting to pick up momentum. People are starting to realize that this is not a hoax. That this is a real program. And to be able to go back into that neighborhood, we're always greeted by all the neighbors and our clients.
Keep talking into the microphone.
So,
okay.
Yep. So it's always nice to be referred and going back into these neighborhoods and cultivating those relationships. You know, it's kind of neat to watch families kind of grow up with the kids. You know, first day of school, there they are. They're waving to us, you know, because they know who we are. They know our trucks. So it's been a really great thing to do.
Any information that we haven't given out to? I'm sure there are folks who are listening in the Brockton area, and I don't know if you want to give it out for maybe the folks in Quincy or any other gateway city that may be interested in this program or who might be involved in the program.
Absolutely. So for folks at home who are listening, grab your pen and write down this number, 617-626-1503. It's going to be a deadline. It's going to be an answering machine. So just leave your name, where you live, which city you live in, and I'll get back to you whether or not you qualify for trees, or you can visit to maurbancanopy.org, and you can sign up right there as well. And I would say also follow us on Facebook.
Now you just said a key word, qualifying residents. For folks who may be just tuning in, interested, if they live in Brockton, what do I have to do if I do live in Brockton? What do I have to do to be a qualifying resident?
So to be a qualifying resident, you just have to live in that planting jurisdiction that I was talking about, being the most northern boundary, City Hall, eastern boundary being the train tracks, most southern point would be the MBTA maintenance station and Longwood Avenue. So in each city, there's going to be 800 acres, such as in Quincy, Fall River, New Bedford, Brockton. So if you live within that planting jurisdiction, you do qualify, and that's the only thing. And you just have to promise us that you're going to take care of the trees.
So again, if I'm wrong, this number is 617-626-1503, and you'll get to speak with someone from the DCR.
Yep, just leave a message.
Leave a message.
And I'll get back to you.
And he'll get back to you. And it's free. It's my favorite four-letter word. Free. Okay. How can you go wrong? And if you have success, if you are somebody who is tuned in listening to this, my suggestion is tell somebody. You knowing that they're trying to reach a certain point during this program, it doesn't hurt. It's free. Anything you want to say in closing as we get ready to wrap up this episode of Monday Night Talk?
Other than Brockton's a really great place to go out, get involved in their community. Communities. They have some really good programs going on out there. But also, too, whether you live in Brockton, Quincy, Fall River, New Bedford, definitely check out this program and see if you qualify. And if you don't qualify, you can still get involved and adopt a city tree. So we'll plant trees in the sidewalks, and we need people to water them. You know, our crew will do it, but it would be even better if our communities got involved.
It's almost like the island, adopt an island.
Exactly.
Right? It's the same ideas. Instead, you're adopting a tree. You take care of the tree. You water the tree. Make sure nobody's nailing a sign into the side of it. You know, you care.
Correct.
That's what we care about. I got to thank you for coming in. And it's interesting enough is that he's wearing his other hat. Matt is proudly also an elected official in the town of Hanson, board of selectmen. But he's here to talk a little bit about being a forester and what he does during the day. And thank you so much for being my guest and talking about this particular item. Not many people know about the things that the state's doing and doing. Again, it doesn't cost anything to do this program, and it has benefits. Give the website again if folks want to find out more about the creation of this canopy and
sure.
how Canopy Cover benefits a community.
Yeah, it's maurbancanopy.org. And Kevin, thank you so much on behalf of DCR and GGCP. We really appreciate your time.
I would say this, is if you guys were planting trees in Duxbury, you would have already been at my house. They'd have you planting a couple of trees. But this is taking care of the gateway cities right now. When you happen to come down to the Duxbury area, I'll make sure that I tap into any programs that you might end up having, although we probably have our fair share of forestry. I think that's all the time that we have here. So what we're going to do is we're going to make way for Crosscheck Radio, which is coming up in a few moments. As you are listening to Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.